that you need scale. So if you can't scale, then you're nowhere as well.
Welcome to Connecting for Future, your podcast for beyond connectivity. And now, your host, Christian Kosling.
Welcome back to Connecting for Future. Today, we are talking about how leaders design the future instead of reacting to it. Platforms, innovation, hybrid connectivity, and the business models that will define the next decade. Tom Griffiths is joining me today. Tom works right at the intersection of platforms and emerging technology. But instead of me giving the full intro, I will let him do it. Tom, welcome.
Brilliant. Thanks, Christian. It's great to be with you today. So yes, I'm Tom Griffiths. I'm one of the directors here in Vodafone Investments and Strategy. So specifically, I'm responsible for mobilizing new big bets and investments and ventures that are going to take our business into the next decade and defining our future and what we dream for it.
Well, that sounds really interesting, right? And Tom, just if you look within your current position, what fires you up?
So look, working in innovation in a telco is a super interesting place to be because there's always so much that you can do. Telcos have been obsessed for many years around working in category adjacency, launching smart home products and fintech. For me, what really fires me up is distilling all that down to work on what really is going to make the difference and placing those key big bets that we know are the right ones to deploy our capital, because we do not have limitless capital like some of the big techs. So we have to be really careful. We place our time, our capital, and our talent, and then shooting and going really, really fast to ensure that we can be successful and then enjoying the success that we then have as a result.
If I just look at, again, at your title, right? So I don't come into Vodafone saying, yeah, I want to be a platform director. When you look back at your career, what decision or moment most shaped how you think about innovation today?
Yeah, so I mean, if I reflect on my career, I've been in telco now for coming on for 15 years. Having started on the shop floor. So for me, I spent a lot of time in our channels. I've looked after wholesale and indirect partnerships and generally enjoyed general management roles. And in those general management roles, it has always allowed me to take these decisions or steer the business in certain ways, which ultimately has allowed us to create an edge versus our competition. I think my reflection has always been taking the higher risk roles. So there's always an easy route and a harder route. The harder route is ultimately where you potentially get more latitude to operate, the opportunity to make those interesting recommendations and ultimately get the interest and excitement for the rest of the business to come on the journey with you.
Tom, everybody talks about platforms and future business models. These words get thrown around. In practice, what do they mean?
Okay, so I mean, everyone has their own definition for what a platform business truly is. I think for me, it really boils down to three things. I think first of all, it's about operating a multifaceted business model and being a builder rather than simply an integrator. If we look at car manufacturers now and reflect on many automotive manufacturers, I don't really consider them manufacturers, they're integrators. And I think the difference with platforms is platforms are not just integrators. They are creating their intellectual property. They understand how everything fits together and they own that code, they own that IP, and therefore they own their economics and their destiny. So for me, it's about the business models and building. I think secondly, you can recognize a platform by their ability to move at speed, innovate, try new things, which is very difficult when you're an integrator. So an integration business would be like, right, and I need to find a vendor. How does that vendor plug in? Whilst if you're a true platform business, you get your devs together and you build based on what your product managers desire. And then finally, I think the other thing I'm noticing more about sort of platform thinking is it's almost turning into a bit of a club. So you need to be able, as a successful platform business, you're operating within a network of platforms. It's a bit like being in a bit of a club. And platform businesses want to work with other platform businesses and are less interested in building value with the integration businesses because they don't have the agility and the ability to move and potentially bring business models together in a way that generates true value.
Would this mean also like that not all the companies always necessarily have to build their own platform, but rather join like an ecosystem instead?
I think it is partially a mindset thing. I think you know, obviously what platforms allow you to do is you are either the platform creator and generator, or you can then participate in that platform ecosystem, or you can be another platform which interoperates. There's nothing wrong with being an integrator and playing a role, and many businesses successfully do so. Not everyone can be a platform. And actually, the other key tenet of platforms is you need scale. So if you can't scale, then you're nowhere as well. So I think it is a decision that businesses and telcos have increasingly got to make. You know, do they consider themselves integrators, or do they want to have a greater sense of their ownership of their destiny through being a platform business?
Which industries besides of telco do you think will be disrupted next by platform-based business models?
So I think the next big disruption that I see on from a platform standpoint is probably that of commerce and ad tech. So we can already see that buying trends are starting to change. So whereas historically Google very successfully built their ad tech business through paid search and paid media, and then you know, the shopping cart and off the shelf e-shop companies and eBay, etc., then built very successful WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get, shop fronts with obviously the forward and reverse logistics built in at the back end. I think we can all now start to see a change towards more of a conversational agentic based experience. And I think, you know, it's fair to say that a lot of the e-commerce environments have already understood that and have built their platforms in a way that they will be able to participate in that new world. I think retailers that have not set themselves up in that way with that sort of agentic back end are going to find themselves struggling, similar to those that maybe weren't ready when the initial e-commerce revolution hit. But I think on ad tech as well, it's really interesting because whilst it hasn't hit scale yet, the amount of customers that are reaching these e-commerce environments from paid search and Google is still very high. The trend is changing. It's no longer I'm going to Google, I'm typing it, I want to buy some biro pens. It's a conversation with a chatbot. It's a conversation with an AI assistant. So the big disruption is going to come from what I call the agentic channel. So customers, end users are going to make a decision about how they're going to access. Today, that might be through ChatGPT, it might be through Gemini, it might be through Meta AI and Perplexity and many others. But it's going to be the ownership of that front window that's going to be key, because that's then going to drive the ad tech model, because it's that window that decides whose advertising platform am I going to call and what am I going to suggest and recommend back to the end user that's then going to lead to a successful sales transaction, which will then drive the flywheel for my value creation. So Tom's view of what's the big platform disruption we're going to see, it's going to be ad tech as customers shift from a traditional paid search-based research model for buying to an agentic one.
Okay. Oh, that's a cool one. Yeah. Let's focus on my favorite topic, which is satellite to mobile. Sounds like science fiction, right? To some people, at least. What's the most practical near-time impact business should care about?
So, satellite and direct-to-device communications is something that's super close to my heart. In actual fact, it's the part of the organization I've literally just rolled off as I'm moving to create the next big thing for Vodafone. But I think if you look at business or you look at consumer, the main use case is an emotional use case. It's what we refer to as nomophobia, the fear of being disconnected. We all have black spots. We would love to be perfect as mobile operators, but we do have to deal with geography and we do have to deal with physics. The reality is you will never get 100% total geographical coverage from a terrestrial network. It's just not possible. So for us, the excitement of direct-to-device communications is it allows us for the first time to really make that promise with confidence that if you see the sky, you'll get 5 bars of coverage and you'll be able to offer a full voice and data service to any unmodified device. That's really exciting. Now, that makes a massive difference as well to small business owners, all the way to lone workers working for large organizations, because it means they no longer need to worry about missing a communication or not being able to get a communication out. So there's the mass market model. There are, of course, then other really interesting use cases that we're starting to look at, centered around, obviously, IoT, the ability to provide critical infrastructure telemetry. Historically, critical infrastructure, you would have needed potentially a VSAT link or a fixed satellite link, which is quite expensive. We'll be able to offer something with direct-to-device that's more akin to an IoT cost base, both in terms of equipment and in terms of service link. But also, we'll be able to take the service beyond, you know, beyond the land. So there's going to be offshore use cases as well, which means that we can start to extend to maritime, military applications as well. And it's not just limited to sea level. Ultimately, these satellites are hundreds of miles up. So if you're flying overhead, they will be working in aircraft as well. So you'll be able to continue to enjoy your sort of native service on your devices, irregardless of where you are.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? So like how many companies are out there who are focusing on satellite? Yeah, people know like Starlink, right? AST Space Mobile. Who else is there?
So I think you first will have to start with, well, what are the different types of satellite communication? Okay, so if you look at Starlink as an example, so Starlink are a huge, very, very exciting, innovative company, which are ultimately part of a bigger company, which is SpaceX, which now, of course, includes XAI as of last week as well. Now, Starlink do not just operate one system. They operate a whole network of systems. They have Starlink, which provides service to fixed broadband satellite receiver dishes. There's the Starlink direct-to-device system, which communicates with unmodified handsets. And then, of course, there's the Starshield constellation, which is used for military applications. There are probably others as well that we don't know about. But they all interconnect as a mesh, a bit like our Wi-Fi networks at home. And that's what brings them tremendous scale. So the way that they communicate back to the Earth for their backhaul and the way they communicate together is the same. It's the front haul that makes the difference. And that's really the starting point for, well, what are the different satellite operators that are playing out? And really this comes down to what use case you're trying to satisfy. For the fixed satellite offering, there is Starlink, which is well known. Amazon Leo are coming hard on heels of Starlink now with a really, really exciting service. They're going to be scaling through 2026. We obviously have Telespeed LightSat. We have OneWeb, and there are a number of other providers as well, which offer different flavors of a service that is ultimately designed to replace a fixed broadband line or fixed lease line. On the direct-to-device side, there are, again, other services. So there's AST, which is designed to be able to communicate with unmodified devices using existing spectrum. Starlink have the same. But then there are also a number of other operators. You know, Apple iPhones have been able to communicate by satellite for years. The way they do that is through the Globalstar network. There's also a service that's being positioned by Iridium and by Link. But these services, which makes them different, operate using mobile satellite service spectrum, which can't be used by a normal device. So I always carve it down to three different types. You have those that will communicate with fixed dishes and a fixed broadband replacement. There's what we call unmodified direct-to-device, which is your Starlink and your AST. And then you have modified direct-to-device, which uses the MSS spectrum bands. And that's your Iridium, your Link, your Globalstar, and how they ultimately operate.
Would this also be like this hybrid connectivity?
Of course. You know, like we found with telecommunications for years, resilience is super important, especially for businesses. So in many cases, one option is the wrong option. You need to be going for a hybrid approach. You need to be building for resilience. So, many businesses will have a fixed line with a mobile failover. Having these different constellations, these different operations that are not just geographically separate, but fundamentally operate on completely different hardware and at different altitudes in space, help in terms of ensuring that businesses have that level of resilience that they need in what is an increasingly uncertain world.
For some of those connections, you also need to get, like, I know usually if you are outdoor, you get like good coverage, right? So for indoor usage, you always have to rely on some indoor coverage solutions, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the we call this the link budget, which is ultimately the signal link between the receiving device and the satellite. Historically, one has always needed a line of sight because the signals are having to travel over such great distances, and the type of spectrum means that it does not penetrate buildings super well. Satellite is never going to be the perfect technology to penetrate buildings. Okay, it's just the reality of the situation. So to cater for that, you know, you could always have the receivers on the outside of the building, then project a Wi-Fi signal inside the building. With direct-to-device comms, they will be able to penetrate some ceilings. That's why we kind of say aircraft, cars. But for some reason, trains are no good. You can't get into trains. They're too thick. So that's what we've been telling customers is cars good, planes good, trains no.
Right. So it's not going to take ages. It's like it's already here, right? From a timing perspective, when do you see, hey, this is definitely going to be available for everybody? Companies are still shooting up satellites, right? So it's not physically available for everybody right now.
Yeah, so I mean, I would, again, it kind of depends on the use case. I assume you're asking right directly about direct-to-device. Okay, so direct-to-device is a complex technology to deploy because it depends on traditional spectrum that has been licensed by each local country. And every operator that wants to use it has to go back to that country and ask permission to change that license. That's a key part of kind of how it works. And the rules of engagement haven't totally been set on that yet and need to be worked through. So that's the first thing that obviously needs to be solved on a country-by-country basis. The second element is, as you say, satellites need to be on orbit. So Vodafone's partner is obviously AST Space Mobile. They've made commitments to get their constellation to a certain size by the end of this year. And, you know, we're working very closely with them on ensuring that is the case. So assuming that they, you know, that they do get the number of satellites on orbit, which is not a straightforward thing to do because, you know, there are only so many launch vehicles available just now. We have issues like the weather and also there's the general capacity to be able to take up on each spacecraft. But assuming that we are able to get to that critical mass this year, the plan is to be launching a beta service during 2026.
Tom, rapid fire. First thing that comes to your mind. One technology trend you're really bullish on.
I'm not bullish on AI in general, but I am bullish on agentic experiences.
Right.
Because I can increasingly see a change in consumer behavior where people want to spend less time doom scrolling, less time kind of face down, and more time getting experiences, more time getting value. So I see this sort of flywheel of being able to problem solve and get outcomes through agentic conversational based interfaces as coming to the fore. What it is missing at the moment is a device with a form factor that truly unlocks that.
I love this one. Yeah. Biggest innovation blocker.
Ooh, biggest blocker to innovation. So biggest blocker to innovation is what I call the white blood cell effect. So large organizations struggle to do innovation. There's all kinds of reasons for that. But one of the main reasons is that whenever there's anything new, fresh or cool, or is trying to do something in a slightly different way to the core business model, the white blood cells tend to circle around it to attack it and then kill it. It is a general trait because there is always constraints around capital and talent. And in a world where you can deploy a euro of capital that you know for sure is going to give you 4x return, it makes it far more difficult to put that 1 euro in a venture or a new initiative that might give you 25 because you don't know that 25 is going to come forward. And then you multiply that effect across the whole organization and it can be very, very challenging to drive innovation as a result. I think the other thing that drives that behavior as well is innovation is sometimes seen as this sort of special hobby project, workshop. You cannot play that role as an innovation shop. You have to be very, very clear on how you're going to deliver value and how you're supporting your organization's market cap in the medium to long term. Otherwise, it is just a shop for pet projects and that won't get you anywhere.
And last one, one skill every future leader must have.
So I have a saying with my product and commercial leaders, which is if you go to any fast-moving consumer goods organization, baked beans, Heinz baked beans, very British, that product manager will know the composition of the bill of materials, what builds that cost base, and why that product is produced in the way it is produced. I'm a firm believer that some of our best leaders have the level of curiosity and also it will curiosity and insight to know how their organization truly operates. What makes it great? What makes it not so great? And also how it fundamentally makes money and why customers want to come to it. And that's one of the reasons why I think that, you know, as Vodafone, we're seeing the turnaround that we are seeing is we've had this relentless focus on customer simplicity and growth, which is how Margherita and all the leaders are now starting to think about how we drive our organization. And really, it's the word curiosity. It's that curiosity to understand how things work and how they need to be working in order for us to grow and thrive.
That's a good one. Actually, there's already one of the ones which combines also the last topic, right? If you can give like future leaders also a piece of advice, what would it be?
It's going to go back to the AI topic again.
Okay.
Which is a bit like innovation. Innovation, there's loads you can do. The question you always ask is, should you? And the same is with AI and automation and augmentation. There's loads we can do. Should we? So as I think about the future leaders that are coming up through the organization and they're thinking about the deployment of AI, they all need to think about where they came from and where they built their personal toolboxes. Because if we overly automate and augmentate, we will lose our source of talent for the next generation. So it sounds a bit soapboxy on my part, but I think about my career and I think about where I started as a sales executive 15 years ago. I spent a year driving my sales manager around the country because he happened to live down the road from me. Best job interview I've ever done, because he was like, where do you live? 10 minutes down the road. Brilliant. You've got the job. So I just drove him around for a year and I took notes. I followed up actions. But what I learned in that year working for that sales director ultimately has honed the craft that I now take forward as a senior executive. And I would not have had that experience had my role been fully automated. And I wouldn't be here. So I think as a real lesson learned for future leaders, we have to ensure that we retain some of these career pathways where people can truly learn their craft of how to operate in a corporate so that corporates can continue to yield value both now and in the future.
Wow, fantastic.
That was really deep. Sorry. It's the real thing for me, right?
It's awesome. Tom, I know you're going to take a break now, right? So, but when do we see you again? Would it be like if people want to pitch you and talk about things? What is the Mobile World Congress, or is it
too early? I will be at Mobile World Congress. Look, my sort of focus area, having now concluded my work on direct-to-device communications, is I'm really excited to kind of look at how are telcos going to be interoperating with each other and with other brands as we move into the 2030s. I think of this as a concept like borderless communications. So super interested to kind of and interested to discuss and collaborate with organizations that are in that world and are thinking about not how everything is playing out today for telcos, but how it might play out in the coming decades.
Well, that's it already for today. Thank you so much, mate. And to everyone listening, thanks for tuning in. The future isn't out there somewhere. It's what we choose to build together. So reach out to Tom, right? I will share his LinkedIn profile on the show notes. I wish you all the best and hope to see you soon.
Cheers.